everyone, and welcome back to another episode of We're Watching Star Trek, the original series. As always, I'm your host, Brandon, and today we've got Dan.
Hi, how's it going? Fun fact, I share a birthday with William Shatner.
Oh, I did not know that.
I did not know that either until the other day.
Oh, what did you just, were you like Googling William Shatner's birthday just for the hell of it?
It randomly showed up somehow, and I'm not sure how it came up, but someone wished William Shatner or, Captain Kirk a happy birthday. I'm like, wait a minute. So I looked it up and go, holy cow, I share a birthday with him. So I guess that makes me the captain.
Yeah. Okay, it's your show. You start from here. Go ahead. What's this episode?
Well, like any good captain, I'm going to pass off all my work to my right-hand man, Spock.
Delegating is what makes a good leader. Never do the work. Delegate the work. It's a useful skill. So no Paul today. He's going to be out for this one. But we are going to just go on ahead with our, Twitter at WWSC_podcast. I feel like if you you probably listened to every episode before this one, you're probably tired of me saying it, and you know by now, so you're either engaging or not, and that's fine either way. But we are on season 2, episode 26, which is Assignment Earth, and it is the last episode of season 2. We finally made it there. I thought that it was going to be like, I don't know. I guess they didn't. Did they do like season finales back in the 60s like they do now where they like make a big deal out of everything? Because this just kind of seems standard stuff.
Anticlimactic.
I guess like compared to now. Yeah, like that's what I'm saying is, did they do like when did that whole thing happen where like the season finale had to be this big like cliffhanger or something, or like, you know, this big episode of something to keep people interested during the off season?
Oh, man. If I were to guess, I feel like maybe like the 80s.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking too. Like, just, I mean, I was going to name a show in the 80s and then I just realized I can't. Like, I don't know what ran
you're
in
like
the
Transformers.
80s. Oddly enough, as someone born in 87, I didn't watch a lot of 80s TV. So,
it's, right?
Yeah, I mean, I was only there for 3 years, you know, and I'm not, you know, aware of my consciousness for any of it. But the original air date for this was March 29th, 1968. And we open with a captain's log stating that they used the light speed breakaway factor to travel backwards in time and are now in extended orbit around Earth. So apparently time travel is just a thing they do now. Like, they did it on accident before. Now they just do it.
I was going to say, like, if they're supposed to be following, quote unquote, the prime directive, not screwing up civilizations, you know, natural evolution, wouldn't time travel be a major no?
Yeah, exactly. They're like, well, you know, it says not to mess with anything. But it doesn't say not to mess with anything in the past. Like, they have to be specific.
That's true.
I guess maybe since time travel is new, they don't have rules about it yet. It's like, you know, flying drones in the last 10 years. you make the rules based around the bad things that happen.
Oh, yeah, we just screwed up a whole timeline. You're good.
Yeah. They said that they are using their deflector shields to remain hidden while they do research to find out how Earth survived desperate problems in 1968, which is oddly specific a year for them to pick. Like, you know, Earth really sucked in 68. We should go back and see why. Like, how did they make it?
And funny enough, wasn't that the year they were filming in?
Yes, which is what makes it great. Sulu, he's at the helm, and the entire ship just starts to shake. And Kirk gives orders as Spock contacts a bridge from the transporter room to inform them that they've intercepted someone's transporter beam. Which I thought was really weird that Spock is just in the transporter room for some reason. Like, since when is he ever just hanging out there?
He was just kicking with Scotty.
Yeah, it's really weird. Like, they're on this time travel mission to, like, watch Earth, and the guy that does all the scans and stuff is not at his station scanning stuff.
Yeah. Look, Spock's not interested in, you know, past Earth.
No, he knows it all already. But Kirk notes that the 20th century didn't have, you know, beaming technology, and Spock announces that something is trying to beam onto the ship, so Kirk just rushes to the transporter room. And Spock then tells Scotty that the beam is originating from 1,000 light years away, and Scotty says that no transporter beam can reach that far, even in their century. So Kirk enters the room, and there's a guy just beams onto the Enterprise, and he's just holding a black cat that looks like my black cat, but all black cats mostly look the same, so that's why he looks like my black cat.
And right away, I'm kind of like, this looks like a British Bond villain.
Yes. Yep. He looks like he is up to no good. But from there, we get the show opening, and the guy steps off the transporter pad, and he asks the crew why they intercepted him. And then Kirk just now decides to call for security, and the guy asks them to identify themselves. So Kirk, you know, introduces himself. And the cat, whose name is Isis, makes noises, and the guy is just, like, talking to the cat, which they're like, those are terrible cat noises, by the way. it's clearly not that cat making those noises. But he tells the cat that they're on a space vessel, and he asks what planet they're from, and Kirk says that they're from Earth. So the man says that that's impossible because there weren't any ships in that time period, and he sees Spock and notes that there are humans there with a Vulcan and deduces that the crew are from the future. So he demands to be beamed down immediately, and then he just, like, goes over to the transporter console. So security finally gets there, and Kirk tells them to set their phasers to stun, and then Isis, which is the cat, comes forward, and the guy tells the cat to be careful, so it just backs off. And then the guy introduces himself as Gary Seven, which is honestly a pretty cool last name. Like, he's just Gary Seven. And
he could have been 007, but he's like, no, yeah. I'm going to be Gary
Seven. I'm going to be Gary Seven, yes. And he says he's from the 20th century, and he starts to explain, but Kirk cuts him off to say that humans from the 20th century don't go beaming around the galaxy. And it's like, you know, he was explaining. Yeah, first of all, yes. But he was just explaining to you what was going on, and you cut him off. So, like, maybe you just shut up and let him finish, and you would get your explanation for everything. Like, literally all he had to do was listen. He's like, the guy's like, oh, yeah, here's why I'm here. And Kirk's like, wait, no, you don't go beaming around the galaxy. Like, all right, just give him a second.
He's like, that's impossible.
Yeah. But Gary says that he was living on a far more advanced planet and was beaming to Earth when they intercepted him. And Kirk wants to know the location of the planet, but Gary says that they want their existence to be kept a secret, and it'll be unknown even in Kirk's time.
Hold on, like, how would he know that? He's not from the future. He's just guessing.
Right. Wait, did we ever establish that whether or not he was from the future? Because he has knowledge of future events. yeah, exactly.
Wait a minute.
Like, he's from another planet, but like a far more advanced civilization. I don't remember them specifically saying whether or not he's from the future as well, but he has knowledge of future events, but also doesn't have knowledge of some future events.
That's kind of like his whole motive, like what he's trying to do on Earth. He's, you know, not to jump ahead, but he's got a mission. Like, he knows what's going to happen.
Yeah, he's trying to preserve the timeline.
But did they say he was from the future also, or they just was abducted at that timeline or at that time and he just experienced a higher civilization?
Right. But then, like, again, not to jump ahead, but the end, there was, like, some talk about his future, and so, like, he didn't know it. So I didn't think about that until just now. I don't know when or where Gary is from.
I believe Gary's lying. That's an old statement to say that the civilization that's beamed will never be found.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. But Scotty says that it's impossible to hide a whole planet, but Gary is, like, very snide, and he's like, well, maybe it's impossible for you, but not for us. I'm like, damn, man, you didn't have to cut him down like that. Jeez.
Like you're an idiot, Scotty. You don't know what you're talking about. You only help invent time travel.
Right, yeah. Stupid Scotty, you moron. Gary says that if Kirk interferes, then he's going to change history and destroy the Earth and probably himself. It's like, well, you know, it wouldn't be Kirk's first time. So,
I've time traveled before. I know how this works.
I time travel. I destroy civilizations and planets. Like, that's, you know, sometimes I destroy myself. It's just what happens.
He's the original destroyer of worlds.
Yeah. But Spock agrees that delaying Gary could be dangerous. And Kirk wonders what happens if Gary is lying. And it's like, listen, like, he was beaming through space, like, he beamed onto your time-traveling ship, he knows about Vulcans and you guys, and, like, you think that he's up to no good for some reason? Like, what about him so far says bad guy to Kirk?
I mean, he had that kind of a style of kind of like a bad guy, though, not the, like, typecast or anything, but...
Well, and to be fair, he does have a cat. Which,
yeah, I mean, Dr. Evil, the Claw. Yeah,
the cat has a fancy necklace, so I guess that is, like, typical bad guy stuff. But to me, I didn't think he was up to no good at this point. Just, you know, I don't know, Kirk's got some intuition. But Gary says that it's a critical point in Earth's history and that the planet he's from wants to help the Earth survive. So Kirk speculates that maybe Gary could be an invading alien from the future. And Kirk will not let him, he won't beam Gary back down without proof, and he confines Gary to security. So Gary's being led out of the room, and Kirk calls the sick bay, and then Gary's like, screw this, and he throws a couple of guards to the ground, and then a cat jumps on one of them, and Spock uses the Vulcan nerve pinch on Gary, but Gary turns around and chops Spock and pushes Scotty away.
Zero fucks.
Yeah, he no-sold the Vulcan nerve pinch. Like, Spock's just looking at him like, what? There's probably a first for him, I imagine.
At that point, I'm like, okay, this guy might be a villain because he just shrugged off Spock with no problem.
I just thought he's like some kind of like future
android.
He's the time patrollers from Dragon Ball, where he's just like trying to preserve timelines, and he's like just trained up real well. Can you imagine the training to have the Vulcan nerve pitch do nothing? You think they just do it to you over and over so you build up a resistance?
That's the boot camp.
Just keep pinching your nerves.
It's like I'm dead inside. I can't feel anything.
Gary goes to the transporter console, and Kirk picks up a phaser and stuns him. And then he tells McCoy to check Gary in security confinement and see if he's human or not. So we cut to a little later, and Kirk gives a captain's log as Spock is just holding and petting the cat, which I did not expect. And Kirk still doesn't think Gary is a human. So Kirk asks Spock what he thinks of the cat, and Spock says that it's lovely, and he finds himself strangely drawn to it. And I'm like, same. that's why we have cats. Kirk makes an announcement to have all science, engineering, and supervisory personnel lock into the briefing room, and he explains that their next move could put the future of Earth at risk, so they're going to have an all-department meeting here. He puts navigation on screen nearby, and Chekhov reports that they're not finding habitable planets in the direction that Gary came from, and Spock notes that Gary said his planet was hidden. So Kirk switches to engineering, where Scotty reports that they haven't been able to analyze a transporter beam, and it was so powerful that it fused most of their recording circuits. And he says the beam could have brought Gary back through great distances or even time, but they can't know. So maybe that's where, like, maybe he did just literally beam through time.
Yeah, well, but they leave it so open-ended that, you know, you can't definitively say one way or another.
Right. There are some issues with him being a time traveler, but there are also some issues with him not being a time traveler in this episode. But Kirk turns to Spock for a historical report, and Spock reports the current Earth crisis would fill a tape bank, and he notes that there would be an important assassination today, an equally dangerous government coup in Asia, and the launching of an orbital nuclear warhead platform by the United States to counter a similar launch by other powers. And I looked it up to see exactly what was going on around this time in 68. And actually the, what I found was that the assassination could have been one of two, the one being Martin Luther King Jr., but another one that they predict, like it hadn't happened yet, I guess, but happened. I want to say it was either like a few days before or a few days after this episode aired was, JFK being assassinated.
Oh, no kidding.
So they kind of predicted. So they probably were referencing Martin Luther King Jr., but accidentally predicted JFK being assassinated. And then, this time in 68 was pretty crazy. There was like a coup in Iraq, and then, but that wasn't until July. So if the MLK thing was happening today, then that would have put them in April. And then I didn't find anything about like a nuclear platform, but I think what I saw was like there was like rumored stuff around the time, but nothing confirmed.
I want to say if they're going off like real history, 67 was a nuclear space treaty where America and Russia wouldn't put any nuclear weapons in space.
Okay. And I had figured that there was like reference to like Soviet stuff going on.
Well, so. I believe that's why they kept saying like the unknown power, because this is taking place in 68. America and Russia would have had the nuclear treaty, which
right.
America's kind of just saying, F it. Like, there's another right. country putting them up there, so we're going to put them up there.
Yeah. We weren't comfortable with openly naming the Russians as bad guys at that time, or the Soviets, like we do in every video game and movie now, every right. single one of them.
They're always the bad guys.
Yeah, it's the accent. Plus, the AK is a very cool looking gun.
It really is.
Kirk asks if orbital nuclear devices were one of the era's biggest problems, and Spock says that once the sky was filled with orbital H-bombs, the slightest mistake could bring down one by accident, setting off a nuclear holocaust. So Kirk calls Bones and tells him to hurry with his report and join them in the briefing room with his analysis. And we go to the holding area, where Gary looks like there's no door on the holding area, but he goes to touch it and it's just a force field. And he gets a little shock, and the guard is just looking at him like, ha, idiot. So he takes this little pen from his jacket and he turns a little part of it and makes a noise, and these two little prongs come out, which they never do that again. He uses this thing frequently and the little prongs never come back out.
Now hold on. I just want to say they kind of stole something from Doctor Who on this one with, like, you know, it's not, he uses a screwdriver, but it's pretty close. He's using a pen and he's using like a sonic weapon to open stuff.
Okay. I'm not familiar at all with Doctor Who. It was Doctor Who before this or after this? Or around the same time.
I want to say Doctor Who first aired in 1963. You'd have to check me, but I believe it came out quite a few years before Star Trek did.
Okay, so there's some possible influence here.
That's the way I took it.
Okay. But he points his little pen at the door, and then the force field shuts off. And so the guard draws his phaser and points it at Gary, but Gary points the pen at him and makes him relax. Just makes it like, basically like hits him with an instant edible. And just makes him relax against the wall.
I will say Doctor Who's sonic screwdriver cannot bring people to orgasm. So.
I was very happy and relaxed. Yeah. So Gary moves past him and tells him that he's tired and he should go to sleep. And the guard's like, yeah, and just instantly goes to sleep, which I wish I could do that.
You need that pen.
They didn't think to search Gary before they put him in the cell.
Hey, look, the security guards are garbage. We know this. Yeah,
like, even if they searched him, they're like, oh, it's just a pen. Like, take everything. And where did they put his cat at? Oh, wait, that's right. Spock had it. Why would they not hold the cat somewhere, too? Like,
the cat wasn't a threat.
I would be suspicious. Like, okay, guy potentially time traveling through space and for some reason has a cat. Like, why would you bring a cat with you? I would be immediately suspicious of the cat.
Well, and the cat kind of showed intelligence when he was giving, like, commands, you know, secretly, like, oh, don't do this.
Right, and it listened. Yeah, I would be suspicious as hell of that cat. But Bones enters the conference room, and he tells Kirk that Gary's readings are too good and that there isn't a single physical flaw in him. So Kirk thinks that maybe Gary has an alien body. Maybe Kirk's just jealous that he does have flaws and Gary doesn't. It's like, nobody's body is better than mine. He can't be a human. But the cat runs away, and Spock notes that Gary might be telling the truth about everything, but Kirk just wants some proof of that. And an announcement is made, and it puts everybody on alert for the prisoner escape, and Kirk's just like, damn security. Like, why do we even have him? Yeah. might as well just, like, put him in
just
a corner
just let
him
roam
watch
free
him.
At this
yeah.
point.
Yeah. Like, Gary, stand in the corner and promise not to come out. We're all going to leave. Like, they should have just done that. But Uhura calls Kirk and informs him that someone is preparing the transporter to beam down. Kirk wants her to override it and shut it off, and he and Bones and Spock all go run out of the room. In the transporter room, Gary has rendered two men unconscious and is working at the console. And the cat enters the room, and Gary picks it up, and he says that they'll be gone before the others get there, and he and Isis transport away as Kirk and the others arrive, and Kirk tries to stop them, but it just doesn't work. And we go to commercial break from there.
So if you were in Kirk's shoes right now, would you take in consideration that Gary is at least not killing anyone on Enterprise?
Probably, yeah. I think that's a good start for him not being a bad guy.
Consideration.
Yeah, that he obviously has the opportunity because he could grab any phaser of any of these people he's rendered unconscious and set that thing to, you know, disintegrate, just ruin everybody's day. But yeah, he does not do that. So yeah, that's a fair point. But we go on Earth and there's a hidden door in a room that slides open to reveal a big, like, bank vault door. And that opens up and there's like some blue smoke that starts to swirl around it. And then Gary and Isis emerge from the smoke and enter the room. The door closes on its own, all the doors close on their own as Gary looks out the window into the street, and Isis is just making some strange cat noises, and Gary agrees that it's incredible that people can live at that primitive time. And he tells Isis that they're not going to have to be there for very long. Not the people, but he and the cat. It's like, yeah, I can't believe these people survive here, but they won't have to for long. No, it's actually him and the cat.
Yeah, someone overheard that. They're like, wow, what?
Yeah, excuse me? He goes back to the hidden door and tells a computer to turn on. And then like a whole wall turns around to reveal a gigantic computer, which these days would be like the size of a cell phone. And he tells it to specify the locations of agents 201 and 347, and the computer tells him to identify himself, and he tells it to check his voice pattern and that he'll be listed as Supervisor 194, codename Gary 7, which is, again, cool name. And the computer confirms his voice, but has no listing for a Gary 7 on the planet, and he says he's a Class 1 supervisor, and he orders it to override its instructions and answer his questions, and the computer's a little bit sassy, and it says that it's a Beta 5 computer.
I kind of liked it, though.
The computer says that it's a Beta 5 computer, and it asks him to confirm his identity by describing the agents and their missions. I feel like that's just like a CAPTCHA thing, and it should have been like, oh, yeah, I can do that. You just got to, you know, click on the squares with cars or bikes or stoplights or whatever, whatever the hell, and that'll confirm your identity. He's like, damn it, like, it's like the corner of this one's kind of in this. Like, do I highlight
does
this
that,
one
that
or not?
Count?
Yeah, I'll just do it, but... And then it's like, oh, read these squiggly numbers and letters and tell me what they say. But he cautions the computer that he has little love for Beta 5 snobbery, and he tells it to override. And then Isis makes some noises, and probably telling him to just do what he needs to do. So he decides to comply with the computer's instructions. And he describes the agents as male and female descendants of human ancestors taken from Earth approximately 6,000 years ago and the product of generations of trainings for this mission. And he said,
so they were abducted 6,000 years ago, and so they extended like their lifehood then?
Well, I think their descendants were probably taken. Oh, yeah, it says that their descendants were taken from Earth, is what my note says. So then they have to be time travelers. Like, Gary has to be a time traveler then. That at the end of the episode didn't know about the future.
Right?
I don't know. Maybe there's something I missed. To be fair, like we talked about before we started watching this, I started making these notes like 3 weeks ago, and I should have rewatched the episode like this morning or last night, and I just didn't get around to it. So like this section I watched several weeks ago and have like no memory of. I'm just going off my notes. I mean, I remember parts of it, just not, you know, as well as I should. But he says, Gary, being he, says that the problem is Earth technology and science has progress faster than political and social knowledge, and that their mission is to prevent Earth civilization from destroying itself before it can mature into a peaceful society.
They took a gainer at, you know, our current era in technology and in progression.
He'd have been like, nuke it. just destroy it.
Start over.
He's like, I'm sorry, what is this, TikTok? No, get rid of it. The computer finds his answer incomplete, but sufficient, and it says that the agent's location has been unreported for 3 days, so he tells it to start searching. And back on the Enterprise, Scotty's explaining that they can only estimate 1,000 meters or so from where Gary and Isis beam down, and they form a plan to beam down after Gary, and this time they're going to use proper clothing. Paul, I really wish Paul was here for this one, because there are a few things that he would have had some things to say, and this would have been one of them. The amount of times they go down to a civilization without proper clothing, and they finally do it, and he's not here to talk about it.
I feel like, though, Spock wasn't gangster enough, though. Like, his clothes were all right, but it didn't compare to the gangster episode for me.
Yeah, that was pretty solid. Poor Spock always has to wear a hat, though. Like, just to cover up his ears, which I think would be weird as well. Like, because if he's wearing like a beanie that only covers like the top of his ears, I would go, where the hell are those ears going? Like, how far up do they go? You have to cover the entire ear.
Would really suck if they were, well, they were probably in Florida, weren't they?
Because, yeah. The shots of the exterior that we get, I think, are New York City, but I think it's supposed to take place in like Florida. But the base that they use is not real. But if you're launching a rocket, you're either going to be in Texas or Florida, not California, right? Yeah. So yeah, you'd be Texas or Florida if you're doing it in the U.S., which they are.
Which, man, wearing a beanie would be really uncomfortable if they're doing it during the summertime.
Right. And they all have like trench coats and stuff on. But, I mean, whatever, you know, it's a fashionable thing. They're not there for comfort. They are form over function, which is how I like to be, too. But on the planet, the computer tells Gary about the United States launching a suborbital nuclear platform with multi-warhead capacity today. So we know which event they were looking at. Gary says that it's the same kind of nonsense that almost destroyed Omicron 4. And the computer says that the situation is very similar. And it also says that the mission of the other agents was to cause the rocket to malfunction, but they haven't made any progress, and there's an hour and 27 minutes left until launch. So Gary decides that he has to complete the mission for the other agents. On the street, Kirk and Spock walk by in normal clothes as Kirk tells Scotty over the communicator to lock into their position. And then we get a really short, like, 5-second scene of a lady in a hurry and, like, trying to get past a guy on the street. They do that little dance where it's like, I'll go right, no, you go right, and okay, we would do the same thing. And I was like, what is this? Like,
yeah, it was just very, very awkward to introduce her.
Yeah. From there, we go back to the computer, and Gary is... he has some documents made. Like, it's, the computer also apparently can make you fake IDs and print them for you, which is really, really convenient there. And one of them has him listed as like a CIA agent, and then another one, he's New York City Homicide Squad police officer. So yeah, New York City. And another is an NSA agent, which they're launching a rocket from New York City.
Yeah, that doesn't seem right.
Well, I guess with all of the beaming and transporting that goes on in this, they could still be in Florida, actually, now that I think about it.
Yeah, that's true, because he is moving distance.
Yeah, so. He doesn't, like, drive to the rocket. He teleports there later. Okay, yeah. There, we figured that out. God, people who are listening to this are going to be like, are you guys stupid? Like, look, it's been weeks since I watched this. Leave me alone. But I feel like in, you know, the 60s or the late 60s, he's got a CIA badge. I feel like that's really all you need. Do you need the police officer one, then? Like, police officer badge? And the NSA? I mean, or maybe even just the NSA one. I don't know which one of those ranks above the other one.
Either the NSA or CIA, I feel like it would get you in pretty much anywhere you wanted to go.
Yeah, like, what good is your New York City Homicide Squad police officer badge going to do you when you go to, like, Florida? For starters,
but yeah,
like,
you'd have no jurisdiction in Florida. Like, I can't just arrest you.
And what good is that when you have a CIA and NSA badge? Like, you would default to one of those, right? But he opens a map of McKinley Rocket Base, which once again is not real. And the woman from the street, her name is Roberta, and she walks in. She does not look like a Roberta. I didn't expect that to be her name. It's not a bad name. I just didn't expect her name to be Roberta.
Actually, I never caught her name, so yeah, that doesn't seem to fit her.
Yeah, Roberta Lincoln is her name. And she talks to herself and saying that it's her lucky day because she can't be docked pay if they don't know that she's late, which, hey, damn right, lady. Gary leaves his office and asks where she's been, and she starts to explain, but he cuts her off, which, like, why are you going to ask where she's been if you're not going to listen to the explanation? But he asks where she's been for the last 3 days. So she asks why she would tell him and who he is. And he asks where 347 is, and she jokingly says that they're with 348 because she has no clue what the hell he's talking about.
That was a solid joke from her.
Oh, yeah, yeah. But he addresses her as 201 and says that code responses aren't necessary. And then she just threatens to call the police and tells her to sit down. So she does. And this is when he should have pulled his police badge and said, I am the police, but he never uses it. He says that she plays her role well, but that it's no longer necessary, and he introduces himself using his real identity and demands that she type a report of everything that she's done in the last 3 Earth days. So she starts to type on a typewriter, but he says not to use her fingers, and she asks if he expects her to type with her nose. And then the typewriter starts typing everything that she just said on its own, and she tries to get it to stop, but it just keeps typing everything. She's like, oh, you know, stop, and that's what it types. And Gary's like, all right, this is enough of this tomfoolery, and he just shuts it off. And she says that she quits. She's like, I'm not dealing with magic typewriter and this crazy guy. She grabs her stuff to leave, and Gary realizes that she isn't acting, and he uses his pen device to stop her from leaving by stopping the door from opening. So he goes to a little green cube on a desk and ties it into the computer and then tells it to scan and identify Roberta. And it identifies her as Roberta Lincoln, a human secretary employed by 347 and 201. And it describes her physical appearance. and says that although her behavior is erratic, she possesses a high IQ. And then it starts to describe the traits of her body, and she's like, whoa, hey, now, and like shuts it off. Like yeah, it starts to talk about a star-shaped birthmark and like where it is, and she's like, whoa.
It's getting a little personal.
Yeah. Gary asks what kind of work her employer said they were doing, and she says that it was research on a new encyclopedia. So he unfreezes the door and tells her that she can go, but if she does, she won't be helping her country unless she doesn't care about that. And of course, she cares, so she does not leave. He talks about how the devices that she's seen are vital to the security of the nation, and she asks if there's some kind of government agents, and that's when he decides to hand her his CIA agent ID. So at this point, Isis comes out and meows a little bit. And Gary thanks Isis and says he'll be right in. And he tells Roberta that it's a trained cat, kind of like a guard dog. Then he goes into the office and tells Roberta that he'll be busy and that she shouldn't let anyone in. So on the street, Kirk calls Scotty to triangulate the location that they're looking for. And Scotty tells him that they need to go about 30 meters higher. So they go into the building. And back in the office building, Gary is being told by the computer that there was a car accident 10 miles north of the rocket base and that the other agents were killed instantly, which is really messed up. 6,000 years of getting ready for this mission.
They died in a car accident.
And they died in a car accident 10 miles away. Like, how random.
They do say that you're more likely to die 10 miles away from home or like you're...
I think it's like I think you're more likely to be in a car accident within a mile from your home. As I experienced last year, that is true. But Gary doesn't think it makes any sense for them to die in something as useless as an automobile accident, and I feel like that's how everybody feels that knows somebody that died in a car accident.
They should have died epically.
Yeah. He asks the computer to verify the facts, and the computer says that they're verified. What's it going to do, like search the internet? in the hall, Kirk and Spock exit an elevator as Kirk gets more directions from Scotty, and they arrive at a door and ring the bell. And Gary turns off the computer as Roberta answers the door. So Kirk and Spock just barge in, asking where Mr. Seven is, but she just tries to get them to leave. And in the other room, Gary uses the hidden switch to open up the hidden door, and he grabs Isis, which the little switch is pretty cool. There's like a couple of pens on like a little fountain pen thing, and one of them just like, instead of taking the pen out, you just like bend it down like a lever. Like, that's actually pretty cool.
I feel like he read like the Batman comics. Like, oh, Bruce Wayne has like a secret way out, and yeah. you turn like a pin and like a door opens.
Right.
Like, I'm gonna go the Batman route.
Yeah. Spock takes a reading that shows which door they need to go into, and then Roberta goes to the phone and calls the police, but Kirk grabs her and tries to get the phone receiver from her. And what's really weird, this is what threw me off. This whole time I'm like, okay, they're in an office building, right? Like, they have a secretary room right there, and then like the other room is obviously an office. There's a desk. There's like a weird bank vault. But she calls them to an apartment number. So apparently they're in an apartment, or are they in an office? Like, are they in an apartment that's designed to be like an office? Because I'm telling you what, if it's an apartment, but they're using it as an office, that girl has no survival instinct. Like, do not take that job as a secretary in someone's apartment. Like, just don't do that.
That is a good question. Are they in an office or are they in an apartment?
Right, the whole time. I've been calling it an office, and then she's like, oh, yeah, we're an apartment number, and I'm like, okay, is it the terminology in the 60s was apartment at that time was interchangeable with, like, office? I don't see why it would have been. Dwelling.
What kind of apartment has a giant-ass vault?
Right, but what kind of office has a giant-ass vault?
That was true.
Yeah, so I don't know which one they're in. Like, do they live there or do they work there?
Both.
Yes. Either way, Gary is unlocking the vault door using a combination lock, and it's like, really? Like, that's a shitty design. Like, earlier it opened on its own, and now you have to put in a combination on this thing, like, when you're in a hurry? Like, all your technology and you're just using a combination lock?
Apparently they didn't want to spend the money for like a thumbprint.
Yeah. Kirk is manhandling Roberta and he hands her off to Spock, and then he goes to the door, and while she fights with Spock, she accidentally pulls off his hat and reveals his ears, and Kirk uses his phaser to shoot the door open, but he's too late. Gary, Seven, and Isis are gone. Elsewhere, Gary emerges from a large hangar door with a sign that says, "Warning, liquid hydrogen." So he's, like, at the rocket base. And he walks around as an announcement is made to stand by for launch area clearance. And there's 60 minutes to launch. And then we get a shot of a rocket on the other side of the building that he came out of, and we go to commercial break. So Kirk finds Gary's plans to the rocket base, and he goes back to question Roberta as she warns them that she already called the police, and then the police show up. They have really fast response time. Like, must have just been in the area. And I thought it was really weird. They take out their service revolvers here from their pockets. Like, that's a dangerous place to be holding that. Like, they're wearing, like, these long police trench coats, and they just have them in their pockets.
I guess I did not realize where they pulled their guns out of.
Yeah, just, like, straight up pocketing those things. Kirk calls Scotty to have them get ready to transport them, and then Roberta runs to the door to let the police in as Kirk and Spock run to the office, and the police follow them in, and Kirk and Spock and the police are all transported to the Enterprise. So they get to the Enterprise, and Kirk and Spock run off the transporter and have Scotty reverse energize, and the police are returned to the office. So they're just like, what the hell was any of that?
So definitely the Prime Directive has been definitely...
Absolutely. The moment they made contact with Roberta, the Prime Directive was screwed.
Well, the cops, how did they explain that? Like, we were transported on this ship, then beamed back down, like...
Right. Yeah, I think they're going to be getting a little bit of time off and maybe a psych evaluation.
Well, I'd imagine that CIA and the NSA will definitely be having a conversation with them.
Yeah, they're going to be really curious about this. At the rocket base, there are 50 minutes to launch, and Gary is standing by the launch director's car when a security guard asks to speak to him. So Gary gives him an ID, and the guard says he'll have to confirm it, and he tells Gary to put the cat down and keep his hands to his side. So Gary does, but, you know... Maybe having a cat at a rocket launch is a little bit weird and suspicious. Yeah, like, it's just fucking walking around with a cat in a rocket. The cat is the one thing in this episode that I think makes he doesn't even disguise himself, but like he could plausibly pass for like CIA or NSA or all this stuff, but he's just carrying around a cat. I feel like that kind of, you know, ruins things for him.
Look, if I have a cat, nobody's going to believe I'm up to no good.
Yeah. And not to jump to the end, but the cat really serves no purpose in this episode.
Yeah, when we get to that point, I'm like, what was the point of that?
Yeah. But the guard calls for an ID check. So like he goes to a phone that's like literally right next to them. And he asks for an ID check. But Isis attacks him and Gary zaps him with his pen. And Gary takes the phone and tells the security team on the other side that everything is fine. And then he tells the guard to turn around and walk away. And they do. And he tells the guard to sit down and have a little nap. So he does. So Gary starts making adjustments to his pen. And then we get an alert that 45 minutes to launch. And the launch director gets in his car. And he's going to go to the rocket gantry. On the Enterprise, Scotty is trying to get a view of the rocket base. And they look at the rocket from a couple of different viewing angles. As Scotty notes that he could lock Gary and beam him up if he could find him in the pictures. Which I believe... that all of this is actual footage, like from a real rocket
launch at that time.
Yeah. I wonder which one they used, actually.
Would that have been like the Apollo missions or... Well, I was going to say, was Apollo 9 what landed on the moon?
This was from the Saturn V rocket with the Apollo 4 capsule is the footage that they used. And that happened in November of 67. Saturn V was the launch vehicle that eventually took the astronauts to the moon.
Mm.
This was launched from the Kennedy Space Center. So, yeah, in Florida. But, yeah, so actual footage from a rocket launch. And you could tell because it was, like, different quality than what they filmed with. And, like, some of the quality was kind of in and out, like, some of the shots. But obviously, like, it looked better than I think a miniature would have, like, the actual launch footage that we see later. I don't think you could reproduce right. that with a miniature at that time. And there obviously wasn't the CGI to do that.
Well, and if the film already existed, why not just use it?
Exactly.
Repurpose it.
Yeah. I think that this was the first use of this footage, though. I don't think that, like, this had been used anywhere else. And, like, this was the first use of the Apollo 4 footage.
Oh, like NASA gave him the permission to use footage.
Yeah. So Spock notes that Gary is probably at the gantry or a control center, and Kirk plans to get beamed back down as Scotty continues to scan. So we get more shots of the rocket launch and or more shots of the rocket as the launch director arrives at the gantry with a couple of guards, and he starts to do his final checks of the area with the guards, and they walk away from their cars, and Gary and Isis slip out of the director's trunk. And then more shots again of the rocket and a control area, which I'm pretty sure the rocket control area is also like actual footage. It was like really grainy, and I don't know why you would build all that stuff and put all those people there for like one shot. Like, they reused this shot several times over and over. So then a guard tells another guard to lock up the elevator at the top so that they can leave, and everybody gets, they all leave, the guards and the launch director.
What was weird about that scene, though, is when they said that, the elevator was going up, and none of them questioned why the elevator was going up.
Well, yeah, that was why they lock it at the top. So they were sending it up and leaving it up there so nobody from the bottom could go up before the rocket launch. Like, that way nobody uses it.
Why would you lock it from the top and not the bottom? Because wouldn't everyone have been cleared?
Yeah, at that point,
by then?
Yeah, at that point, everybody should be gone, but then you send it to the top and lock it up there so that nobody can sneak
okay,
in.
Okay, I got you.
But Gary somehow managed to slip onto the elevator, and he starts ascending to the top of the rocket with Isis, which I don't know why, but like, as he's riding this elevator, just I had like a weird flashback of playing Metal Gear Solid, like the original one. I don't know, just like an elevator. Like, there's several weird elevator rides in that game. But the napping guard from earlier wakes up just as Kirk and Spock are beaming down, and he draws his handgun and tells them to freeze. We go to Scotty, and he's still searching for Gary, and he's not having any luck. Meanwhile, the launch director is informed of the captured intruders. Back in the office, Roberta is having a one-sided argument with the cube, and she tells it to tell her employers that she quits, and they're dead. They don't care.
They had a good run, though. They lived for 6,000 years, so don't feel too bad for them.
Yeah. I like that she's just in this office arguing with this cube. That, like, she doesn't even know what it is. Like, she doesn't know what it does. It's not responding, but she's still arguing with it. Then she promises not to tell anybody anything that she saw, and then the cube actually beeps at her. So she sits on the desk and, like, leans back, but she bumps a little pen and accidentally opens up the lever in the secret wall. So we're back at the rocket base, and we get 20 minutes to launch. As Gary is climbing around on some scaffolding, and he opens up a panel on the side of the rocket and just starts messing with wires. Elsewhere, the guards are going over Kirk and Spock's belongings, like they took away their phasers and their communicators, which, you know, as Kirk's guards should have done with Gary when they got him.
their security is better than the future security.
Yeah, they really laxed on security training in the future. But they're offering to make a deal and go easy on Kirk and Spock if they identify themselves and explain why they're there, which, you know, back in these days, it's one of those things where it's like, what were you doing? And they're like, oh, we're just having a look. And they're like, all right, get out of here. Now they just charge you with all kinds of shit.
Well, why was that not the argument from Kirk? Like, oh, we were just wandering around and we just kind of stumbled in here.
Yeah. I don't know if they could sell that to them, but I mean, if they played dumb and just like, oh yeah, we just saw this thing and we just went in.
They could have been like, look, we're just huge fans of rockets. We were trying to get a closer look.
Yeah. And I feel like in the 60s.
Like, all right, you little scamps. Like, we're not going to throw you in prison for the rest of your life. We'll charge you like $100 and on your way.
Little scamps, like they're 10 and 11 years old.
They give like a little hair toss to them.
Yeah. But I mean, like back in the day, you know, they probably would. I don't know. They might not have been arrested for that kind of thing if they weren't doing anything like, you know, dangerous or like destructive. Like, all right, like I get it, get out of here and don't let it happen again. But now, yeah, you're getting arrested, probably charged with like terrorism or something.
There's no rubbing the head and like get out of here scam.
No, God, no. The countdown launch continues as Gary continues to mess with the wires, and Isis has a lot to say during this. And on the Enterprise, Scotty is still searching, and he manages to find Gary on the scaffolding, and he calls for security to go to the transporter room, which I noticed during his shots of, like, zooming in to find Gary, there were people on the scaffolding, like, at the very top. Like, obviously, they have to use the footage that they were given, and you can't edit those people out during this time period. They just didn't have the technology. So, but, like, there's people hanging out at the top of, like, some of these scaffoldings where there's not supposed to be anyone.
Scotty knew that those weren't the people he was looking for.
Yes, exactly. Roberta accidentally opens the vault door in the office, and then Gary gets beamed to the Enterprise. But Roberta is messing with the dials and buttons on the vault door, and she accidentally has Gary sent there instead. So he pops up there, and he tells her that she intercepted the Enterprise trying to beam him on board, and he goes to the computer and tells it to scan the launch site, because there is 1 minute left to launch. We get a really weirdly placed captain's log right in the middle of all of this. And Kirk is just explaining that even if they identified themselves, they wouldn't be able to stop Gary Seven, and they don't even know if they should, which is just basically him going, well, the writers didn't really have much for us to do right here, so we're just going to do nothing.
Yeah, we're just sitting around awkwardly while a launch happens.
Yeah. Then we get the rocket launch. It's a really, really good footage. And yes, that is actual footage. I actually really enjoyed all of that stuff that they used for this. But after the rocket launches, we get commercial break. And we come back and it's continuing its flight. And Gary explains to the computer that he didn't complete his adjustments, but he wants to know if he can still take over his plan. And the computer says that, yes, he can. So he does. Roberta sneaks away and goes to pick up a phone. But Isis enters the room and alerts Gary. Who then uses his pen to shoot the phone cord and sever it, and he asks her not to leave, and says that all the doors are locked. Isis again.
Well, I guess I'm not leaving then, since all the doors are locked, and yeah, I can't turn a doorknob, or I can't unlock a door by turning the knob.
Yeah, like, please don't leave. By the way, you can't. Like, okay, I guess I won't then. But Isis has a lot to say again, and Gary is like, oh, are you jealous? And he tells Isis that it's most unbecoming, so Isis then leaves. The computer announces that it's standing by to begin the planned malfunction, and Gary gives the order to begin. So we get rocket second stage detachment and some cool footage of that. And Gary tells the computer to take the rocket off course. And in the control room, the rocket control crew start trying to correct the malfunction, like they detected that something's not right, and they're trying to fix it. Gary has the computer arm the warhead, and so it does, and Roberta picks up a small metal box from the desk, and we cut away from that. To the Enterprise, where Uhura is listening to all kinds of various signals, like you hear a bunch of different languages and everything. Chekhov, who we're just seeing, I think, for the first time this episode. Oh, wait, no, I think we heard from him in the very beginning.
Yeah, earlier on.
Yeah, so never mind. Yeah, Chekhov contacts Scotty to tell him that the rocket is armed, and Sulu says that the computers indicate an impact somewhere in the heart of Euro-Asian continent. And Chekhov says that they still have time to destroy it with their phasers if they need to. So Uhura says that she's getting military alerts from all the major powers on Earth.
Couldn't the Enterprise just use, like, a tractor beam and, like, beam
hold it or something.
The warhead up into outer space to make sure it doesn't fall?
Yeah, you would think so. I mean, they have tractor beam technology. They've used it on the shuttle pod before. But Scotty decides to risk calling Kirk, and Uhura give him a call. We go back to the control booth, and everybody's really, really busy, so Kirk moves to open his communicator on the desk, and when he does, the guard hears the sound of it opening and orders him to back up, so he probably should have put that on silent. I feel like for the amount of times he's had to make secret calls, that probably shouldn't make a loud-ass noise when you open it. But also, I kind of want that noise as a text ringtone now, but it doesn't matter. I keep my phone on silent all the time because I hate the noise it makes. Back at the office, Roberta whacks Gary on the head with a box, just absolutely clobbers him with him, like just solid WWE chair shot with this thing, smokes him. And
apparently the metal box will take him out, but the Vulcan, you know, pinch, yeah, you know, doesn't squat.
He didn't train against the metal box. Against the nerve pinch. She apologizes and says that she does love her country, but Gary can't be a CIA agent, and she takes his pen device and orders him to stop. He asks the computer for the rocket status, and it says that there are 6 minutes to impact. And Gary tells Roberta that if he doesn't finish what he started, World War III is going to happen in 6 minutes. So we're back in the control room, and they're trying to boost the signal to the rocket to make it self-destruct. And then Scotty calls Kirk, but the guard hears him on the communicator, and he picks it up, and he's like, hello? Hello? He's trying to talk to Scotty.
Who's this new phone?
Yeah. Spock steps forward and he's like, oh, you have to use this thing here. And like, instead of helping him with the communicator, he gets him with a Vulcan nerve pinch. Kirk and Spock then take their things, and Kirk has Scotty beam them to Gary's apartment/office. The launch director then picks up a phone and asks for the president. And damn it, I want to do that in my life. I want to pick up a phone and go, get me the president. And then like somebody actually does get me the president. But I don't think I'm ever going to have that happen.
Well, if you do, you have to make sure it's a red phone.
Yes, it has to be red phone. In Gary's apartment slash office, Gary is trying to convince Roberta that he's a good alien. He's like, look, I'm an alien. Yeah, for sure. But I'm a good one. And the computer then announces 2 minutes to impact. So Kirk and Spock walk in, and Kirk asks Spock to try to detonate the warhead from the computer. So Spock then goes to work on that. Gary says that he wants to destroy it too, but 100 miles above the ground to frighten the Earth out of the arms race. Scotty calls Kirk to tell him that all major Earth powers are on missile alert, and retaliatory strikes have been ordered on missile impact. I tried it twice and said it wrong both times. Retaliatory. There we go. The computer announces the missile's altitude at 450 miles, and Gary wants the chance to do his job, but Kirk doesn't know what Gary's job is. He's like, I don't know what your job is. Well, like, if you would have listened to him in the very beginning, you probably could have found out. But he says Gary could set the controls so that they can't detonate the missile. And Roberta steps in and points the pen at Kirk, telling him to get away from Gary. And Gary grabs her arm and tells her to be careful because the servo in the pen is set to kill. And he takes the pen from her and he hands it to Kirk. And Kirk is like, okay, he's probably a good guy. He wasn't going to let her just smoke me right here. It's weird that that's all it took after Gary's been going around not killing people. He spared every guard. But since he spared Kirk, he's got to be good.
Well, I guess if he wanted me dead.
Yeah, he could have just done it. Gary says that there are only seconds left, and Roberta says that Gary's telling the truth. I don't know how she knows, but she knows.
Look, she had a change of heart. She just smacked him over the head.
Yeah. So then the whole World War III
thing. She
felt
bad about it.
Yeah. The computer announces that there's 55 seconds to impact, and Kirk tells Spock that if he can't handle it, then he's going to have to trust Gary. And Spock says that without facts, the decision can't be made logically, and Kirk is going to have to rely on his human intuition. So basically, he's like, I ain't making that call. That's on you, man.
You're the captain.
Yeah, I'm not doing that. The computer then says that there's 300 miles to impact, which I don't know why it keeps going from altitude to time frame. It's like, oh, you got 55 seconds, 450 miles. Like, what? Pick one. Like, okay, now you got 35 seconds and 300 miles. But at 30 seconds left, Kirk tells Gary to go, and Gary gets to work. The computer gives constant updates of the rocket's altitude, and Gary then detonates the rocket at 104 miles above the Earth. And everybody is okay. And a little bit later, Gary is using his magic typewriter to type up a report saying that the mission was completed despite the interference from the Enterprise. And Spock says that they actually did not interfere, but the Enterprise was part of what was supposed to happen. I feel like they could have like looked that up.
Come on, Spock, you're supposed to be a know-it-all.
Yeah. And Kirk says that their records show that on that date, a malfunctioning warhead was exploded 104 miles above the Earth. And why didn't they check their records beforehand?
You know, that's not a small detail.
Yeah, we just overlooked that. Or is this one of those things where they don't live in like an alternate timeline? Like the things that happen actually affect their timeline, and it's not the branching timeline theory. So now the records say that.
Well, the way I took it, like, what was it? Spock basically said, like, we were always here no matter what, so this was always destined to happen this way.
Right. That's what I figured too. But like, shouldn't they have been able to see that in their records then and know what Gary was doing?
Look, Kirk just wanted answers. He didn't want to look up historical facts.
Yeah. Roberta looks at Isis, who's sitting on the couch, and then Isis just turns into a woman. Which is really weird.
It was just really out of place.
Yeah. I think that somebody just wanted to get this woman in a cat costume, like a really revealing cat costume. I think that's all that was. And then, like, so Roberta approaches her, and she just keeps making cat noises. Like, somebody that wrote or made this episode wanted this, and that's the only reason that it's there. They're like, look, well, see if we can get this actress to make cat noises in this revealing cat costume.
Also, we can now say Spock petted the pussy.
That's true. I was going to ask if you think Gary's sleeping with that cat.
Most of the episode, I thought the cat was just, you know, they gave the cat, like, super intelligence from this alien race. No, it never crossed my mind that it was actually a human being as a cat.
See, I thought that it was definitely not just a cat, but I did not think it was a person. Yeah. Or if it was, then it would have had an actual reason for being in cat form. But no, it's just
they never elaborate on it. And is he hitting it? Probably.
Yeah, definitely.
Definitely.
Yeah.
It was just unnecessary.
It was very unnecessary.
I'm not going to be mad about seeing an attractive woman in a cat outfit, but it has to at least make sense.
Yeah, it's got to be something. Spock explains that their records also show that the event resulted in a new and stronger international agreement against the use of nuclear weapons. And Roberta angrily approaches Gary and asks him to tell her who that is, like motioning to Isis. And he says that it's simply his cat. And they look again, and Isis is a cat again. Gary asks what else Kirk records show, and Kirk says that he can't reveal everything. Spock says that they can reveal that Mr. Seven and Miss Lincoln have some interesting experiences in store for them.
Well, yeah, you got a cat that transforms into a human. How do you not have interesting experiences ahead of you?
Okay, but here's the other thing. If Gary's a time traveler, would he just go back to his time and just leave Roberta there? Or does he go, hey, you're actually pretty good at this stuff. Maybe you should come work with us. Leave everyone you know and love behind and join their space-time traveling future-saving company.
I mean, for all we know, she has no family, so she might be totally on board with this. Like, oh, hey, get to travel around the universe?
Yeah.
Be a time traveler? Like, hell yeah.
I don't think Isis would be okay with that.
No, she seems to be messing with her already.
Yeah. Kirk calls Scotty to get beamed up as Spock tells them to live long and prosper, which I don't remember hearing that a lot.
I believe this is the first time he says it.
I thought we got it in the first episode during the whole Spock fighting thing when he was doing the whole ritual. I thought that he said that to, I can't remember, it was like T'Pau, I think her name was, or something like that. But I could be wrong. I know. It's been like a year at this point. I feel like when he said that, I was like, is that the first one? Then I was like, no, didn't they say that for the first time in that episode? But then just
not
again. I have
to go back and rewatch, but I feel like this is the first time he actually said it. Well, if any of our audience members are listening, hit us up on Twitter and let us know if this is the first time or not that Spock said it.
Maybe it was the
hand. They know.
Yeah, maybe it was the hand use that was first used in that episode was the Vulcan V hand thing, I'm pretty sure. Maybe that was the first for that one, and maybe this was the first time that this was used. But either way, they get beamed away, and that's the end of the episode. And I'm going to say that this was a weird one for me. Like, I didn't dislike it, but it's not, like, great. Not a lot of dialogue in this episode. There's a whole lot going on, and I'm completely fine with that. I actually prefer that they don't just stand and talk at me for 50 minutes. There's stuff here. There's no antagonist, which there doesn't have to be. I like the idea of like two good guys are kind of working like at odds, and like eventually, you know, everything works out fine. Blah blah blah. I don't know. Like, I really just don't know how to feel about this episode. It wasn't bad. The cat was weird. Was it an apartment or an office? We'll never know.
Yeah, we'll never know.
The rocket stuff was cool. I don't know. I'm gonna say I liked it. I don't need to pick it apart. I enjoyed this episode. What about you, Dan?
You know what? I'm with you. There was nothing offensive in it. I enjoyed it overall. My only complaint is really the cat, like the very end with the cat transforming into a woman. Like there was no need.
Yeah,
it didn't add anything to the story besides, you know, messing with her.
Yeah, and also like the cat did save him the one time against the guard, but I feel like Gary's a capable enough guy that he could do that without that. I think the cat's actually a hindrance because it keeps blowing his disguises.
Well, and before the ending, I just assumed that the cat was modified to be super intelligent, like, you know, like a quote-unquote rocket raccoon that just didn't talk.
Yeah. I wonder if they just...
Like, oh, this guy was abducted with his cat, and they gave the cat super intelligence. I'm like, oh, I could buy that.
I wonder why they kept the cat. Like, I wonder if you think, because if you think about this episode without the cat, it does make him seem a little bit more nefarious, I guess. But he's, you know, now he's got this cat that is like apparently really intelligent and well trained, and he talks to it, so he can't be that bad a guy, right? Like, he's got an animal companion,
right?
He can't be a bad guy.
And he might be the first person in history to tame a cat.
Yeah, that's true.
That well, at least.
Yeah. So, I don't know. That's a weird aspect, but I don't know.
It doesn't kill the episode. It's just more like, well, that was just kind of out of the blue. Like, like, why?
Yeah, for sure.
But it was, out of the whole season, though, it was definitely one of the better episodes that we watch out of season two, but not like top tier level.
Yeah, season two had some bangers, which we are going to talk about in our next episode, which is just going to be our episode recap or our season recap. We're going to go through, you know, favorites, least favorites. What do we want to see from season three? Should be a quick, short little guy. What do you think Paul would say about this episode?
I would imagine overall Paul would have enjoyed it.
You're right.
Like you, I'm kind of curious what he would have said about, you know, the outfits of the time of them actually, you know, suiting up the fit in.
Yeah. I'll ask him at work tomorrow. Like I said, next episode, we're just going to do our season recap. I'm going to have to go back and really look at these because season two took us a while. You know, we had a lot going on. Things kept popping up. But yeah, we'll do, you know, favorites, least favorites, all that good stuff. And, talk about what we're going to do for season three. Which was, spoiler alert, mostly more of the same. we're going to watch them. We're going to talk about them. I mean, do you have anything else you want to add to this one, Dan?
No, you pretty much summed it all up.
All right. Well, since Paul's not here, I guess I'm going to do it this time, which is, Twitter is at @WWST_podcast. Thank you everybody for listening, and we will catch you on the next episode.
Later.